fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side.
Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you once again. And I think we're going to have a fascinating program. We're going to talk about the mystic moons of Avalon, lunar and herbal wisdom from the Isle of Healing. And we're going to talk about a system of personal evolution, a relationship with the goddesses of Avalon, and how to build a powerful connection to the Holy Island. Our guest is the author of this book. We're talking about Jenna Talendru, and she holds an MA in Celtic Studies from the University of Wales, Trinity St. David, and has a bachelor's degree in archaeology. She's the founder of the Sisterhood of Avalon, an international Celtic women's mysteries organization, and she teaches four-day residential training retreats around North America and the UK and facilitates pilgrimages to sacred sites in the British Isles and Ireland. She's a frequent presenter and guest speaker at academic conferences, religious symposia, women's spirituality gatherings, and pagan festivals. And she's been a priestess in the Avalonian tradition for over 25 years. And she's been following the pagan path since 1986. Jenna, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, one thing I noticed here, you talk about the goddesses of Avalon. Maybe there are people out there who are not familiar. Can you kind of give us a feel for the goddesses of Avalon? Who exactly are we talking about?
Well, I just want to start by saying that there are many different approaches to Avalon and the Avalonian tradition. So the one that I'm speaking about and the context I'm speaking about is the one that the Sisterhood of Avalon embraces. And so we draw our inspiration from Welsh mythos, from Arthurian legend, and the main goddesses that we work with are five. These goddesses are Ladaiwith, Creonon, Ceridwen, Arianrhod, and Bronwyn. And they all come to us from the Mabinogi, which is the Welsh mythic cycle, and from the Book of Taliesin, which contains a lot of ancient Welsh poetry. So those are where we draw our influences, primarily with our goddesses.
Now, for someone who may not be familiar with this tradition, they may say, oh, this isn't for me. Is this something that you think that people, regardless of maybe their faith tradition or where they're coming from today, that this is useful for them?
Well, it's interesting. We've had a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds come and do the work. We approach the pagan path and these divinities from a psycho-spiritual perspective. We align with the cycles of the moon, align with the cycles of the seasons, tie into the mythic pathways that these stories lay out for us. And so there is kind of a generality in the work that we're doing about personal growth and evolution that doesn't necessarily require that you believe in a particular way. In fact, if I may say, we've had sisters who are also working Episcopalian priests who also are in other faith traditions. And so there's no requirement around any of that.
You talk about the Island of Healing. What is the Island of Healing?
Well, one of the most well-known traditions about Avalon is that it is a place of healing. It is the place to which Arthur is born at the end of his life. The end of his legacy is to the Island of Avalon, where he is laying in the bed of Morgan le Fay, his sister, his sometimes benefactor, his sometimes foe. And she says that she will heal him of his grievous wound. And that begins the tradition of Arthur as the once and future king. And one of the things we know about Avalon from the lore around it is that its sisters were educated in all of the healing arts, and that it was a place of rest and a place of bounty, and it created everything it needed in and of itself. So for us, we look at Avalon as an allegory in many ways, as the island of sovereignty within each of us. And that the healing that we're talking about, of course, there's physical healing and there's emotional healing, but it is that spiritual healing that occurs when we find sovereignty within, where we, like Avalon, are able to meet our own needs to produce everything we need in and of ourselves. So that is really a lot of the focus of our tradition.
In terms of how one accesses this, is it, do you just jump in? Are there baby steps? And obviously this book, I would think, would be one way to access this path. What do you recommend to somebody who's new starting out?
Well, of course, this book and the book that preceded it, Avalon Within, really lays out what I like to say is the loom of the tradition and the tapestry that each individual who walks the path creates is up to them and up to their own work. So we try to provide a process by which people can connect with these energies, can connect with how to find the island of healing within themselves, and of course, to see what it is they need to heal and how to approach it. So there is a structure in place, and the mythic moons of Avalon ties into the moons of each year, the moons of each month, each station, each phase of the moon has a particular energy with it. And so it really does provide a step-by-step guide for jumping into this process. It ties in energies of herbs to help connect. It connects with the stories of the goddesses that we mentioned to be able to reflect those stories within. So there are many different portals of entries, herbs, myth, the moon, the season, to help the individual tie in the way that is most resonant with them. So there's multiple ways of connection.
In terms of things like meditation, I mean, when people think about the spiritual kind of work, that's one of the things that they think of. Does meditation play a role in all of this?
Oh, it does indeed. One of the things we do is we work with what I like to call the mythic map. The stories themselves hold within them a process that we can follow. And so for us, there is something, and it comes from Irish tradition, the word Imram or Imrama, which is a tale of a journey to the other world over water. The water, in my view, can represent the unconscious mind entering into the subconscious. So we call the barge, we announce our intention. The barge comes to bring us to Avalon. We have to part the mists of illusion that prevent us from seeing the truth of who we are and the truth of the world around us. We obtain the sword of sovereignty. The Lady of the Lake presented the sword that empowered Arthur, for example, to be king. So we're claiming our inner sovereignty by gaining the tools that we need. Then we arrive at the shore. We arrive at Avalon itself, that sacred center of divinity within us and our connection to it. And then we master and we, you know, ascend to the top of the tor, to the height of the island, that sense of connection with the divine. So that Imram tale is one way of connecting to the other world, of going within, using that as a path to meditation. Also in Celtic tradition, we talk about the nine waves. When you go over the ninth wave, you have entered into a place that is unknown. You've entered in, you've passed that liminal barrier into the other world. And so again, that guides our inner meditation to see ourselves traveling over each of the waves in turn. And once we have passed over the ninth wave, we are now in that otherworldly space. So there is very much a mythological component, I'm sorry, a meditational component in the work, and it draws its structure and direction from Celtic myth.
You talk about personal empowerment by aligning with lunar rhythms. Talk to us about the importance of the moon or the mystic moons and that lunar aspect, because that's fascinating.
Well, we know that the moon plays a big role in many of these older traditions. And as women, you know, we kind of in some ways embody that lunar energy, depending on your approach to it. And I think that it ties into the idea that the moons illuminate what is within, it illuminates the darkness. And by following the cycle of the moon throughout the months, how she moves through her phases, by following the cycle of the 13 moons throughout the year, we are being granted an opportunity to have certain parts of ourselves illuminated. And so if we can align with those cycles as they move through the seasons, they provide for us a mirror through which we can look at ourselves, to do that inner work, to see the truth of who we are, both our light and our shadow, which is why we also follow the moon through its phases as well. So it's a really powerful ally, I think. And especially if we bring in the components of the herbs, because so much of plant lore, growing, harvesting, not even from a magical perspective, just farmers, you know, people all over the world know when to plant an herb according to the moon, when to harvest it according to the moon, and how their medicinal qualities can be affected by when you plant and when you harvest. And so there is this interlocking thing between herbs and the moon and the myth and how those all are reflected within us.
It's one of those things where I really think that people today, we think that we're so smart with our iPhones and our gadgets and so forth. I'm very guilty of this with, you know, being a techie myself. But there are a lot of ancient wisdoms that seem to have been lost and that we need to reconnect with. Do you agree with that assessment? And is this method one of the ways to reconnect?
I do agree with that assessment, although I am also a techie. So, I like to straddle worlds in many ways. But I do think that when we begin to bring ourselves into awareness of the cycles that are around us constantly, the cycles for women who bleed that come through us monthly, when women gather in communities, we tend to align with ourselves. You know, there's that phenomenon of menstrual synchrony, for example. When I was living in a dorm in undergrad, you know, women, we all seem to cycle together. So there is something about that, you know, there's this other level of existence that I think we've become so divorced from. And by bringing our awareness to the cycles of the moon throughout the month and throughout the year, the cycles of the seasons, and celebrating those holy days and reflecting what those things hold within us, we are realigning ourselves with this lost piece. And I think it makes it doubly powerful to see the ways in which it can illuminate truths about ourselves personally, as well as the greater metaphor of the truths about the world. I do think that all cycles are related to each other. And if we understand how things work without us, meaning outside of us, we can understand how they work within us. And we can then harness that energy for personal growth, harness that energy to achieve our goals in life, to live our sovereign truth, both outside and within.
Now, can you give us some examples? Maybe somebody who was, because I'm assuming that most people that are listening to this are either new to it or they may not be this advanced. Can you give us an example or two of someone who has come in and obviously for privacy reasons, you don't give names and things like that, but who have come in and gone this path and it's proven very helpful to them?
Well, I have to say, I've been doing this work with the Sisterhood of Avalon for 25 years will be next year. And I am honored and privileged all the time to hear the stories of women for whom this has made huge changes in their lives. Coming to understand themselves better, understand where they've come from in the past. We talk about the three levels of service in our tradition. Service to self, meaning coming to understand who we are and the truth of where we've come from, what has built and created our inner culture. Service to sisters, our community, how we can use what we understand about ourselves to build a collective community and participate in it as clearly as possible. And service to source, service to the divine, to connect with divinity and see the ways in which we do that work in the world. So there are many, many stories, but it's always humbling and beautiful and gratifying to hear how women have taken and men have taken these traditions and applied it to their work and are amazed at how much they have grown, how much they have left aside. And we do embrace shadow work. We think it's really important for us to understand the places where we are in need of healing, the places where we are in need of self-understanding, to not, you know, engage in any of that spiritual bypass. Because I think, like an oak tree, which is such a powerful druidic symbol, the deeper the roots, the higher the branches. And there is a synchrony in those things. There is a balance.
Now, what do you think maybe the one of biggest misnomers about this kind of work is? I think when you're working in any kind of spiritual field, that may be something that, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but may not be considered in the mainstream. It may be new to some people. There may be some misconceptions. Do you think that those are out there, and what would you think they would be?
Oh, certainly. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. It depends on who we're talking to. So if people who are not walking a earth-centered or pagan polytheistic path, of course, they see anything that uses any of those, you know, keywords as perhaps demonic or something anti-Christian or anti, you know, what have you in that way. So there's that misnomer where we're trying to, you know, hold a space around, you know, divinities from ancient cultures aren't devils and demons, those kinds of things. So that's from outside of the tradition, outside of the larger pagan community. I think within the pagan community itself, the Sisterhood of Avalon, in general, when I teach, I like to say, you know, we're not a Miss Avalon cosplay group. I think a lot of people, that book, The Mists of Avalon, is kind of an entree into paganism for many years. And, you know, you see the images, you hear the names. And so people are like, oh, you're trying to be like the book. And I think that's kind of the thing that we've had to do some education around. I think that the writer of the book drew upon the same legends that we draw upon, and that's where the any similarities occur. But we are not trying to emulate what you read in that story.
Now, it's interesting because you studied in Wales and got your degree there for, and this book delves into Welsh mythology. It seems to me that might be a very rich tradition that a lot of people haven't tapped into. Can you talk a little bit about Welsh mythology?
Oh, I would love to, yes. So I actually grateful to do a distance degree, although I do travel to Wales fairly frequently. It is a beautiful space. I don't even have that background, but it's called to me. And I think that when people think Celtic, especially in North America, most of the time they think Scottish, they think Irish. Welsh traditions are kind of not as in the forefront as those are. And so it is so beautiful to connect with the rich heritage of these traditions. And one of the things that I see, which is so interesting, is because when the stories of Wales, because like all Celts, they engage in oral tradition. They pass down their stories, you know, generation to generation. And so they didn't start to get written down until the medieval period, until the 12th, 13th century. So the stories evolved for a long time. We think some of them went as far back as pagan tradition, but the myths themselves don't talk about the characters as gods and goddesses, but as perhaps supernatural beings, as magicians, as fairy queens, as giants, as sorcerers. So there's kind of a bit of mythic archaeology that needs to go into kind of going through the mythic strata of these tales. And so when I was doing my studies, I found I had to become a bit of a medievalist first in order to become a Celticist, to kind of see what was a reflection of the time period when the stories were written down, and to kind of find the roots of the things that go back further. But it is a beautiful, vibrant, lyric tradition. And one of the things that I find so beautiful about it is that it's not all, you know, cattle raids and battles. There's so many beautiful things about birthing and marriage. And so there's very woman-centered pieces in there as well. And a lot of times these big epic tales kind of leave out that piece. So it is very empowering to women, I think, as well as men.
That's an interesting point, because obviously some of the more common religious traditions are very male-centered, and to kind of get back to this this female-centered viewpoint is very interesting and a nice juxtaposition to what we're used to. And you mentioned your visits to Wales and so forth, and just a personal comment. For the first time at my advanced age, I just turned 50.
You're not that much more advanced than I. Just a year, actually.
There you go. But anyway, I got to stop making fun of myself. I've still got a good ways to go, hopefully. Uh-huh. But anyhow, I went to the UK for the first time. And just in a general sense, that experience of going to some of these countries that have this long, long history as opposed to the States here, it just really is, it's very centering, and it makes you feel, to me, it made me feel much smaller in the sense that in a good way, though, it wasn't a negative, it was positive. It's just like, wow, I'm just one little blip on this whole history of humanity. And it really, mm-hmm. it really gives in, and you really can't sense it unless you're there. Just such beauty and such tradition over there. And it does give you a new perspective on looking at things.
Agreed. Oh my.
Now, as we're discussing this, are and I hate to ask this because it's such a silly thing in some ways, but are there like little things that you can do along this tradition, like kind of, I don't want to say the top five tips or quick things that you can do in 10 minutes, but I am kind of asking that. Or what are some simple things, or is this extremely involved and, you know, you really need to go from one to 1,000 and go through these books piece by piece? Are there little things we can incorporate?
Well, I think that there are many layers, but the intention of the layers are to find a place where people can jump in where they resonate. They don't have to do all of the things. So they can if they want to, but that's not necessary. I think doing anything is better than looking at a big body of work and saying that's too much. So things that I would say are, of course, pay attention to the cycles around you. Just begin in awareness of what's happening around you seasonally, what's happening around you lunarly. Start to do some tracking, do some aligning with your personal cycle and the cycle of the moon. Make note every day of your emotional state, your level of energy, your perspective on the world. I was happy today. I was, you know, feeling really down today. I accomplished all the things I wanted to today. This was a day where I just stayed in bed. And begin to see if any patterns arise that you can identify with. You know, during the waning phase of the moon, I'm lower energy. During the full moon, this is when I can really push through the projects that I need. During the waxing moon, perhaps I'm a little shyer than other. So it tells you a little bit about yourself and how these cycles perhaps are influencing you, but it also empowers you. It gives you a tool of self-knowledge that says, you know what? Next week, it's the waning moon and I don't like being around people during that time. And I've got this family event that I need to go to and I'm not going to be at my best self. What can I do to help bring myself to that best self so that you're not necessarily, quote, a victim of circumstance? You can empower yourself to say, okay, I know I can do this kind of meditation ahead of time to be centered. I can bring the stone with me to, you know, bring out the more gregarious parts of myself. I can work towards being prepared for this. So it gives you some piece of self-knowledge. So I would say paying attention to the cycles around you, see the ways in which those are reflected in your psyche. And a big piece for me is always this, read the stories, read the myths. You know, it's a rich corpus of information from the Mabinogi, which is the four branches, which have the tales of these divinities. Some of the associated tales, the earliest Arthurian stories come from Welsh tradition. This is the place where all of that began. So to read the tales and, you know, kind of get a sense of the culture of Wales, of the Celtic Britons, you know, if you understand the culture, you understand the people, you understand the land and why did they birth these stories in this way? What does that reflect upon the peoples who birthed them? And then our resonance with them can tell us something about why we feel drawn to these stories as well.
Now, when you talk about healing, are you talking spiritual healing, mental healing, physical healing, one, all of the above? When we talk about healing specifically, what are you talking about?
Well, I think that all of the above, they're all interrelated, but specifically in the Mythic Moons of Avalon, we're talking about the psycho-spiritual perspective, the psycho-spiritual healing, the ways in which we can take myth, the ways in which we can take this understanding of cycles without and direct it within. So it is spiritual healing, which for me does integrate all of those things, our emotional processes, traumas that we've suffered in the past, the things that make us who we are today. When we undertake an understanding, when we go within and do our shadow work, and then we take our insights around where core wounds have come into our lives, where we have experienced trauma, where we are in places of fear or limitation, that's the parting of the mist process that helps us reveal where Avalon is. And then to take those understandings and the energies inherent in keeping us in those places of woundedness, and then taking them and redirecting them towards something that can change our lives, to undertake a new adventure, to enter into therapy, to create the opus that we've been longing for, to create the life that we want, to be in better relationship with the people in our lives. These are all the side effects. These are all the effects, not even side effects. These are the effects of this kind of work, this psycho-spiritual healing. It happens both within and without. And I'd like to say as well, there are certain things about our physical natures that we can, of course, use this work to, I'm going to eat better. I'm going to, you know, go to the doctor finally to find out about that thing that I've been so fearful about. But also the sense of, you know, I may have a disability, and instead of fighting against myself with this disability, accepting myself as who I am and being inspired to, you know, carry that along with us and acknowledging the truth of that and not allowing that to prevent us from participating in life as fully as we can. So it kind of teaches us to, you know, accept what must be carried and transform that which can be changed.
For a short time, I did a podcast called Living Beyond Challenges, and although it was not one of my more popular programs, and I only did about 20-something episodes of that one, but it was talking with people with physical challenges who overcame and did impressive things. I think about this young man who was paralyzed in his body, except for, I think, three fingers and everything below the neck, and he would paint these beautiful, beautiful digital pictures with some type of controller. I think she literally had three fingers on one hand that worked. And my goodness, I mean, as somebody who can't draw a stick man, I was just so impressed completely by his artwork, which was beautiful and looks like an impressionist painting, just beautiful. However, I was even more impressed by his spirit, the idea of, you know, this is what I have to work with, and I am going to get every ounce of beauty and satisfaction and fulfillment and gifts to everybody else that I can. And I think that many times, and I include myself in this, we look on our limitations and we let those limitations define us instead of letting the things that we can do, which are many things, define us. I think that's such an important message.
Beautiful. And if I may say, this kind of ties into the Arthurian piece very strongly. The idea of the wasteland that arises when the king, you know, the healing the wounded king ties into the whole Grail mythos, which is so part of the Avalonian tradition. And so when the king is out of balance with the land, when he is physically maimed or otherwise unable to fulfill his duties and be in right relationship, whether he is unlawful or whether he is literally physically unable, there's a wasteland in the land, and the Grail, a sip from the vessel of transformation, will bring things back into balance. And I think that's part of that desire for obtaining our sovereignty. The parts of ourselves that are the wasteland, the parts of ourselves that are in a place of imbalance, require us to seek out sovereignty, to seek out the vessel of transformation, to seek out the goddess who, in the earliest of Celtic stories that we have from Irish tradition, was a goddess who mated with the land. And so she changed over time into a cauldron and into a grail, but the vessel of the feminine remains the same. And so there's this sense of being in balance with our right side and our left side, the brain, although, you know, the metaphorically speaking, with the active and passive aspects, with the logos and the emotional aspects, the consciousness, the unconsciousness coming into relationship, will heal that wasteland. And so, whether regardless of where our physical body is, you know, as you said, by no longer embracing our limitations in terms, even unconsciously, in terms of I can only go this far, how can we bring that vessel of transformation to those places of limit, to those places of pain, to those wounds, and see it transformed and have that inner landscape grow again? Powerful work.
And another thing that I would think about, not only physical, but I can think about people who have had a horrible loss in their life, maybe a loss of a child or loss of a spouse or partner or loss of a parent, a very deep, deep loss to somebody who is very close to them, whether as a friend or a relative or whatever the case may be. I'm assuming some of these techniques could be very helpful in dealing with that kind of situation as well.
Oh, certainly, yes. One of the other great appellations of Avalon is that it was an island of the dead as well, that's where spirits would reside after death. And, you know, doing that kind of grief work, filling those inner cups full with embracing the emotional impact of such a deep loss is so very healing. And I think so much about our culture, you know, shuns death, you know, it divorces it from our day-to-day lives, and it requires people who are dealing with deep grief to, you know, snap back. You know, you get 2 weeks, otherwise you're, you know, considered overly mourning, overly emotional around it, can be medicated for it, instead of, you know, having it be such an integrated part of our lives, and to support people in their grief, to support people and ourselves. You know, how do we comfort each other? How do we acknowledge what an impact those things have on us? And I think that's part of this healing process as well. Absolutely.
Well, absolutely fascinating, very interesting. And if you're interested in things spiritual, this sounds like a great book to pick up on. The book is The Mythic Moons of Avalon, Lunar and Herbal Wisdom from the Isle of Healing. Jenna, how can people find the book and also tune in to everything else that you do?
Well, I am very grateful that the book is available pretty much everywhere. You can get it from Barnes & Noble to your online retailers. It's Llewellyn Worldwide is my publisher. So you can get it everywhere. And you can find out more about me at my website, which is my name, JennaTellandrew.com. It's spelled strangely, but you can find it. And I'm also on Facebook and on all of your usual social networking media. And the sisterhoodofavalon.org is also where the tradition is being held, and all of our different events. We do festivals, we do intensives, we do pilgrimages to sacred sites. We're a very vital community, and all women are welcome.
Well, it's been a delight to speak with you today, Jenna. Thank you for your time and joining us on the other side.
Thank you so very much. It's been an honor and a pleasure. Appreciate this time with you.
And thank you for tuning in to The Other Side. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.